Welcome. You're listening to the Media Talk 101 podcast. Media Talk 101 is a nonprofit ministry dedicated to teaching media discernment in the light of following Christ. We want to encourage you to visit MediaTalk101.org for more information about this ministry, as well as helpful articles and videos. You can also visit our website, CaptivatedTheMovie.com, if you want to learn more about our award-winning documentary. And if you'd like to learn about our latest endeavor, the Christian Worldview Film Festival, you can find out more information about this event happening in March at ChristianWorldviewFilmFestival.com. My name is Philip Telfer. I'm the founder and president and the host of this podcast, and I'm back with my co-host and friend, Rhett Simpkins. So, Rhett, I have a question for you before we get started.
Okay.
It's real generic. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, the reason I'm asking that is I had this wonderful call, a talk over the phone with one of our podcast listeners named Matthew. And very grateful because Matthew is contacted me via email because he wanted to volunteer to help with the Christian Worldview Film Festival. And he's a multi-talented guy, does a lot of different things. And not only is he going to be helping at the event, he was willing to do some help out before the event. And so he's an artist. And so he's going to be helping us design a poster. And so as I was talking with him yesterday, he asked me this question. He said, "How is Rhett?"
Well, Matthew, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, well, it took me by surprise because I'm like, well, how do you know Rhett? And he says, well, from the podcast. And I said, oh, you're a podcast listener. Oh, that's great. So we're so glad to hear from someone.
Yes.
We have at least one podcast listener, Rhett, and someone who's wanted to know how you're doing. So I said, I think he's doing pretty well, you know. So so yeah, I thought I'd ask you. So thank you, Matthew, for your help with our upcoming event, and also for being a faithful podcast listener. Now, the last 2 weeks, we have been talking about dramatic story structure, and not only traditional dramatic story structure, we are using the five-act model as opposed to the three-act model. And that five-act model, in brief, starts with a beginning. It has that's the first act that just sets the scene, introduces the players. And then second act is what's called the rising action. This is the problem. This is what creates the tension in the story, the need for a hero to arrive on the scene. And that leads to the third act, which is called the climax. And after the climax, you would think that the story's over and you live happily ever after. And yet, in really great dramatic storytelling, you have what they call the fourth act, which is the falling action. And this is after the climax, when you think that everything should be going well, and things sometimes get darker, and you begin to wonder, how is this going to end? And, you know, you're left at the edge of your seat wondering, wow, I thought this was going to be this happily ever after story. Now it looks like the bad guy might win. And then you have the fifth act, which is the conclusion, and things you find out. Is this going to be a tragedy? Is this going to be a comedy? How does this all play out? Well, we've been talking for 2 weeks now about how this five-act structure is very similar to what we see in God's story. And this morning, I was after I spent some time reading my Bible, and I've been reading this book by A.W. Tozer. I'm a big fan of A.W. Tozer, and this one is called Of God and Men. It's one of my favorites. I think all of his books are my favorites, but it's the subtitle is Cultivating the Divine-Human Relationship. And in one of these chapters that I read this morning, I'm just going to read an excerpt from this. He says, people are coming more and more to excuse every sort of wrongdoing on the grounds that they are just trying to secure a little happiness. And he goes on to say that it has become quite the popular creed of the masses. That we are born to be happy is scarcely questioned by anyone. No one bothers to prove that fallen men have any moral right to happiness, or that they are in the long run any better off happy. The only question before the house is to get the most happiness out of life. Almost all popular books and plays assume that personal happiness is the legitimate end of the dramatic human struggle. And I don't know about you, Rhett, but I thought that fit quite well with what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Now, when you think of happiness, are there any passages that come to your mind?
Yeah, actually, as you're reading that quote, my mind went straight to the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus talks about, you know, you're blessed if.
In fact, some translations actually use the word happy, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the best translation, to be honest, but because I don't know if we understand that term happy, but we've talked about that in the past. But let me look that up. It's easy to find. Matthew chapter 5, and I'll read it here out of the, I'm reading out of the New King James here. Matthew 5, verse 3, and this is Jesus speaking. He uses the term blessed. Once again, some translations will say happy, but either way, if you prefer the word happy and you're pursuing happiness, then, or this happily ever after life, we're going to get the real definition of it right here. Jesus is going to define this for us. So if you look up in the Dictionary of the World, happy, and when I talk about the Dictionary of the World, what I'm talking about is, you know, if you're watching popular movies, if you're listening to popular music, if you're reading popular magazines, if you're reading popular books, if you are spending all your time just getting your definitions from Facebook or Twitter, surfing the web, and finding the things that are trendy, then, you know, that's the dictionary of the world. And you are getting your definitions, you know. And the interesting thing about definitions is words change. You know, the definitions tend to morph because people mm-hmm. redefine words. And this is a classic example. So that's why I like to go back to the Webster's 1828 dictionary to kind of look, what did this word actually mean at one point? And in our case, we're going to go back all the way to Jesus to find out, how did he define happy? Or in the case of the translation I'm reading, blessed. What does it mean to be blessed? And so verse 3 of chapter 5 of the book of Matthew says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Well, this doesn't sound like what the world teaches us. You know, this doesn't sound like happily ever after, being poor in spirit. Hey, I thought we're supposed to be full of self-esteem. And look at the next one. "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." Oh, you know, mourning. I mean, that's exact opposite of our culture. Hey, we want a levity and happiness, and we want to pursue things that make us feel good. But the idea of mourning is being happy or being blessed. "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Now, this one flies in the face of today's contemporary ideas of happiness, which are often full of pride and selfishness, this narcissistic attitude that has permeated seemingly every corner of our culture. And yet, we're told, you know, those who are meek are blessed. Those who are meek are the ones that truly understand happiness. It says, "For they shall inherit the earth." Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Righteousness is what is right, as opposed to what is wrong. And that there's those who hunger and thirst after this. I don't want to just go along with the crowd. I want to have a growing, I hunger for this. I want to know and live what is right in the sight of God. Not what is right in a secular, humanistic, postmodern ideal, because that ideal doesn't even define right from wrong. You know, so it's like, yeah, whatever. Whatever's right for you is, but that's not what we're taught here. There's something called righteousness. It's defined by God, and those people who have a hunger and thirst for that are the ones that are blessed. And the thing about appetites, which we've talked about on this podcast before in regard to media and entertainment, is that appetites are fostered. You know, the more you consume something, the more you become just acclimated to that, and you have a hunger and thirst for that. So, you know, in the physical world, if you drink a lot of soda, you know, or pop or Coke or whatever you want to, you know, depending on what region you come from, you know, I grew up in a family, we drank a lot of soda pop. How about we just cover it both in one, you know? So we drank a lot of soda. And, you know, you get used to that. And the idea of drinking something that's less toxic, you know, becomes distasteful. You know, something like pure water is not as tasty as is Coca-Cola or your favorite drink. Or maybe down here south, it's the sweet tea, which is just as full of sugar or, you know, high fructose corn syrup as anything else. And really unhealthy to drink a lot of. But you get used to that. You develop an appetite for that, and that appetite just doesn't go away. It continues to grow unless it's replaced by something else. And so I remember years ago just learning a little bit more about how unhealthy soda is. And even though I grew up on it, I decided, you know what? I'm just going to change my habits here, and I'm going to start drinking more water. And plus, you know, it saves you money. Water is, for the most part, cheaper, you know, than soda. So, and what I've discovered over the years is that the more I drank water and the less I drank soda, my taste changed. And I began, and now when I get thirsty for water, you know, because, you know, soda doesn't actually quench your thirst at all. And likewise, as we talk about, as Jesus talked about, those who are really blessed are those who have a hunger and a thirst for righteousness. You don't have a hunger and a thirst unless you're walking that narrow path. You know, you've gone through that narrow gate, and you begin to walk that. And as you do that, and you walk away from that broad path, then you begin to develop new appetites, and you begin to have this hunger. And what Jesus said about those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they shall be filled. One translation says they shall be satisfied. And that's one thing the world doesn't provide. You know, all the things of the world does not satisfy, just like the soda or the sweet tea. You know, it's like you can just keep drinking it and drinking it and drinking it, and your body begins to crave it because you're so used to the sugar content and the flavor, but it's not really benefiting you. And so likewise, there are so many things that the world, their ideas of what it means to be happy are empty, and it leaves a longing and to try to fill that void, and yet we know that that's actually filled through a hunger and thirst for righteousness. Jesus goes on to say, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And we live in such a merciless society today, this idea of saying being merciful to others. And we all want to have mercy. You know, if we get ourselves caught, you know, stuck somewhere where we're like, wow, I'm really in need of mercy right now. Of course, we always want that. But we're not always trained in this culture to be people who are prone to be merciful. And this is, once again, this is what it means to be blessed. If you want to be happy, then you need to be a person who's merciful. Also, it says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity here, Rhett, to talk about purity of heart. We actually use this verse in the Media Talk 101 presentation, so maybe you can practice here and give me the pure in heart, the Matthew 5:8 analogy.
Okay. Yeah, so it's we kind of relate that to the stars, and how when you're in a big city and there's all kinds of light pollution around you, you look up in the sky and you don't see anything. You might see the moon on a good day because it's just so clouded by this light pollution. But when you get out of the city and you get away from all the light pollution, you can look up and you can begin to see things that were always present, but you were clouded. You couldn't see them before. And it's like that, you know, with our relationship with God. You know, when we're pure in heart, we can get rid of all of these things that are clouding our relationship with God. We step out, we remove those things, and then we can begin to see him.
That is good. And for you podcast listeners, this is also an example of what the Bible calls discipleship. You know, so Rhett and I have been in a relationship of friendship for many years, but also in a discipling relationship where, you know, Rhett was present at the very first Media Talk 101 presentation that I gave in January of, I believe it was 2006 in Chicago, helping me out, and has come alongside me all these years. And so one of the things that I'm really big on is not just giving information to Rhett, but expecting him, you know, to own it and to be able to come out. So good job. You're doing good. So keep up the good work. But it doesn't stop there. Not only being pure in heart, it says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And, you know, there's a pseudo peace out there. You know, you think of the peace symbol, or, you know, people putting up the peace sign with their fingers. But yet we know that when Christ was born, we see a host of angels that appear, and one of them that is speaking to the shepherds, and that's one of the things that's proclaimed, is peace on earth, goodwill toward men, and so that God was extending peace to us, peace between man and God, and likewise, and that's through his son Jesus. But we should also be peacemakers, because if we're going to have God's heart, if we're going to be like Jesus, then we also need to find ways to help people have peace with God through Jesus Christ, but also to have peace with one another. And so those people who do that are blessed. It's what real happiness comes from. And it says they shall be called sons of God. And sons of God is because if you are his offspring, he's a peacemaker. And if you're truly his children, then you are going to be peacemakers. So you will be called the sons of God. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, well, a couple things here. Jesus said, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And this is something that we don't like to talk about these days. You know, how does this fit into this this dramatic story structure? You know, we're so caught up in this idea that we should be living this world's idea of the happily ever after now. And yet, even in these very words that we're reading from Jesus, which what I would call the fourth act, this falling action, the climax has happened. Jesus came, he died on the cross, he rose again on the third day, he ascended up into heaven, he sat down at the right hand of the Father, he established his church, and for the last 2,000 years, we have seen the church being persecuted for righteousness' sake. And Jesus said, this is what it means to be blessed. Now that does not fit, you know, not only the world's ideas of being happy or being blessed, but it doesn't fit a lot of the church's ideas these days. You know, a lot of the popular ideas in the church or popular books or different things that, you know, give this idea that, yeah, we should be living your best life now. You know, we should be having this happily ever after now. And I'm not saying that there isn't a fifth act, because that is coming. There is a fifth act, and we'll talk about that. But we want to talk about this fourth act, this time where we're in a battle, we're in a struggle, and how we define this time in our lives is very critical, that we don't find ourselves caught up in what I would call the pseudo story, the la-la land living, that where we think we're just, you know, this Disneyland-type existence, this fantasy world that has been crafted by the enemy. And much of that has been accomplished through today's media and entertainment, instead of what is real life. And just because people persecute you because you have a hunger and thirst for righteousness, and you are pursuing Jesus, and you are being pure in heart, and you're a peacemaker, and you are meek, and you mourn the things that are going on in this world, and your spirit, you are poor in spirit. All of those things that the world would look on as like, what kind of life is that? Well, this is the truly blessed life, because we recognize that we're in the fourth act. There is a final act five coming. There is a culmination where all things are set right by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. But until then, that does not mean that we cannot live a life that's blessed. And lastly, Jesus said, blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. And Jesus exhorts us and say, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And so here's a key here. You know, we talk about happiness, and Jesus talks about joy, rejoicing. Mm. And you notice that joy, rejoicing, is something you do when you acknowledge God in the reality, in the truth. He says, hey, I want you to look at your present circumstances, and some of them are not fun. You know, they're not happy, you know, quote, happy in the world's ideas, circumstances in this world. People are reviling you. They're persecuting you. They're saying evil things against you on the account of Jesus Christ. And he says, when that happens, not only you're blessed, but I want you to recognize that you're blessed, and I want you to choose joy. And joy is really what we're called to do. We should be people full of joy in the midst of persecution, in the midst of trouble, in the midst of people reviling us and saying things evil against us. And I'll tell you what's really become hard in the church today is that a lot of that reviling, some of that persecution, although it's not physical persecution, it's not, but it comes from within the church, people who call themselves Christians, who say, you know what, you guys are just taking this a little too far. You guys are just a little too edgy, you know, a little about this, you know, this Jesus stuff, and about the Sermon on the Mount, this idea of living a holy, set apart life, of pursuing righteousness. These, you know, just looking at these things. If you were to say, hey, you know what, God's not called you to be a person who is full of pride and self-confidence, and to someone who is to always be loved by the world and all of these things, you know, you're gonna get some pushback from people who call themselves Christians, because this is not in vogue right now. What's not in vogue? Well, reality is not in vogue. You know, fantasy is what is in vogue. Now, Rhett, you know, help me out here. Am I on some crazy soapbox? Or, I mean, is it just me? I mean, I don't know. You and I have talked about these things, but what do you think? I mean, am I really off base in saying that this is happening even in the church?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think if we really think about it, we can all relate to that. If we are pursuing righteousness, if we are hungering and thirsting for righteousness, if we're you know, putting into practice these things that Jesus outlines here, we, to some degree, can say, yeah, I've been, you know, persecuted. Maybe that's too strong of a word for some of us, but we can see where we've gotten some pushback from even Christians who are maybe a little offended by our relationship.
You know, here's another good verse that I think about on this subject, 1 John chapter 2. It's one that I think a lot of Christians are familiar with. Whether we've taken it to heart is one thing. You know, there's a big difference between being hearers of the word and being doers of the word. And that difference, Jesus said, is the difference between a life and a house that's built on sand and a house that's built on the rock. You know, and so when the storms come, that house that is built on the sand, it crumbles. And the only difference between those two, what makes the sandy foundation as opposed to the sturdy firm foundation, is being a doer rather than a hearer of the word. So we're, a lot of Christians hear these words, but very few own them in their hearts. And 1 John 2 verse 15 says, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. So here's the reality check.
I just wanted to ask you a question real quick about that, because I think, you know, maybe some people that are listening might hear you, you know, saying do not love the world and think, you know, that famous verse, John 3:16, you know, where it says God so loved the world. So how do you reconcile those two passages? What's the difference there?
Sure. Well, and that's a great point, you know, because God did love the world so much, but he's talking about the people that were lost and in need of salvation. And we're called to have that same love. You know, we're still to love people so much that we are troubled in our souls about their lost state and willing to share the gospel with them. But when John is writing here about do not love the things of the world, he's not talking about not loving the people of the world. He's talking about the world's system, the world's ideologies, the world's philosophies, the things that Paul warns us about in Colossians 2, where it says, do not be taken captive by the philosophies and empty deceptions, you know, that are found in this world. And that's it's a really rough paraphrase there. But actually, I have a quote here from the author, former pastor and author, C.J. Mahaney. And he says, the world we're not to love is the organized system of human civilization that is actively hostile to God and alienated from God. The world God forbids us to love is the fallen world, humanity at enmity with God, a world of arrogant, self-sufficient people seeking to exist apart from God and living in opposition to God. It's a world richly deserving the righteous wrath of a holy God, dead set against the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is the world we're forbidden to love. You know, so it's the system. It's saying, hey, I don't love this system that's set against God. I don't love this fantasy world that has been created by people who are opposed to God in order to try to keep people from the kingdom of God. And so, for example, you know, Darwinism, you know, this is part of the world's system. Charles Darwin became opposed to God and began to craft a fantasy world in order to draw people after his own ideas, to draw them away from God, philosophies and deceptions that are part of what I call this pseudo story, this fantasy world. He's one of many people we could talk about throughout history this is part of the system that is opposed to God. But that doesn't mean that we don't love people, just like God loves people and calls them to repentance. And it says that God doesn't desire anyone to perish, but all to come to everlasting life. He wants everyone to come to know the knowledge of truth, but not everybody does. Mm-hmm. And not everybody receives that gift of salvation. Not everybody receives even the message that's sent out throughout the world, the gospel of Jesus Christ. They reject that. And so that's what we have to be careful about, because a lot of the media and entertainment today that so many people are saturating their hearts and minds with are not coming out of this God's kingdom. They're coming out of the other kingdom, this other system. And when you, just like any appetite, when you saturate your thinking with all of this stuff, just like drinking soda all the time, that's what you become accustomed to, and that's what we're warned against. And in our household, it's funny because we rarely watch, you know, we rarely watch any media. We're not media free, but we're very, very careful. Now, with this film festival, you know, we had over 100 film submissions, and these are from Christian filmmakers, and they vary in degree of excellence in production, and they vary in degree of excellence of communication regarding truth and storytelling. But nevertheless, it's 100 films to go through in a very short amount of time, and so the Telfer household is different these days. As you know, in the evenings we spend our time watching these Christian films and critiquing them. And my oldest daughter Elizabeth joked the other day, just saying, "Wow, we're watching so much media every day, but we've yet to reach the national average per person of television time per day, which is 4.7 hours of TV each day. We're still not spending 4.7 hours each day, even though we're just for a short season of our time trying to critique 100 different films, and we've still not, and we're exhausted. You know, we're exhausted watching all these Christian films. And to think about that, the average American watches 4.7 hours of television, which is not Christian and is all the philosophies of the world, and it odds with the world, and that begins to create this pseudo world that they live in. And you know what? That fantasy land cannot and will not change reality. God's story continues. It's the true story. It's the genuine story. And it has a conclusion. There is a final revelation. And there is a tragic end for some and a glorious ever after for others. And I believe his story culminates with where it began. You know, I mean, he always was, but at least our part of the story is we were created at some point, you know, and the earth was created and mankind was created and we entered into God's eternal story. But it begins with the I Am, you know, the great almighty God who has neither beginning nor end, who is all-powerful, all-knowing. I mean, there's nothing, you know, that he cannot do. And this is the God we serve. This is the God who brought us into existence. Now, on the other hand, you know, man in his corrupt state, you know, that's what happened in Act 2, you know, man in his corrupt and rebellious state continues to seek a title that he can never have. And that's part of the pseudo story. That's part of the false worldview. That's part of this fantasy land where man thinks, I want to be God. He wants to craft everything. He wants to craft a universe by himself. And he wants to create his own universe, create his own set of rules. Well, that belongs solely to God, the true creator. So this is just man's nonsense, and it has an end. Man has a finite end, and they will, you know, and every man will learn that sooner or later, that the world, what we read in 1 John, the world is passing away. And the lust of it. This will not continue on forever. And even though man continues to try to write his own story, and he tries to make himself out to be the protagonist, and in that process, he's seeking to dethrone God and gain the title of the I Am. Yet, once again, that's just a fantasy. It's an illusion. It's a delusion. You know, it's delusional. Yet, as we mentioned, God so loved the world. And even though man continues to attempt to become God in vain, and this is the ongoing struggle, and even though he remains in jeopardy in his vanity and his corrupted state, even with all that, God became a man and dwelt among us through the Lord Jesus Christ. He was humility's ultimate manifestation. And it's the exact counter to man's destructive pride. This grotesque pride confronted by Christ's magnificent humility and great grace. So Jesus is that I Am. He humbled himself in the face of man's arrogant pride. He was despised. He was rejected by men. And he did all this with joy. It says that for the joy that was set before him. And that comes from Hebrews 12:2. That's actually the latter part, you know, of our theme verse. Mm-hmm. You know, our theme verse for Media Talk 101. We always quote from portions of Hebrews chapter 12, 1 and 2. You know, that let us lay aside the weight and the sin, which shall easily ensnares us, and let us run the race with endurance, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. But it goes on to say in verse 2, for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So this week, I'd like to just kind of wrap this up with that statement, that Jesus endured suffering. And he did it not only with joy while he was on the earth, but for joy, because there was an end result he had. He had an eternal perspective. And because of that eternal perspective, he was willing to come and to save us, to rescue us from our chains of sin and from the destruction, the path of destruction that we were on. And also as an example for us to follow. So next week, we'll continue on, and I'd like to pick up this theme to talk about what it means to endure, you know, and talk more about this fourth act, this trial that we are facing, the battleground that we are in. And hopefully the goal is to see Christians to wake up and to say, you know what, we have got to be awakened out of our stupor, out of this fantasy world, and get into the real story that's happening around us right now. And we want to be a part of that real story. So I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's podcast, and I hope you join us next week as well.
Thank you for listening to the Media Talk 101 podcast. We have just a handful of episodes left until our one-year commitment of weekly podcasts is over. We are prayerfully considering how best to continue, so if this program has been helpful for you and your family, please let us know. Email your questions, comments, or words of encouragement to podcast@mediatalk101.org. And be sure to visit mediatalk101.org for helpful articles, videos, and other resources.